Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, the budget battle has begun as top Republicans and Governor Tony Evers offer dueling messages on the two-year spending plan. Plus, billionaires are opening their wallets in the state Supreme Court race, giving conservatives a financial edge in the final weeks. And a new audit is underway to examine new statewide testing standards for students. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for February 28th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This week, we're going to be talking a little bit about some budget follows and some headlines that we've had throughout the week as now Governor Tony Evers, as he usually does in years past, go out in different communities, tries to sell his two-year spending plan. Meanwhile, we heard a lot from GOP leaders this week at certain panels and media events throughout the week of kind of what maybe some areas of compromise are. But here are some of the headlines that we heard this week. Governor Evers, earlier in the week, touted his state budget, which does include a 20% increase in spending, as realistic during a Wisconsin Counties Association conference. Now, Evers says he expects there to be some issues Republicans and Democrats can find compromise on, suggesting there could be consequences at the polls if they fail to get things done that are popular among voters. Meanwhile, Speaker Voss criticized Evers for, quote, living in a fantasy world if he expects GOP lawmakers will work with him on his priorities that they have previously rejected. So let's just hear a little bit kind of about these dueling narratives that we heard this week from Evers and Speaker Voss before we dive into other headlines.
It's a matter of time before people understand that if they don't get behind certain things, frankly, they're not going to get reelected because the people at home are purple also. And they'll have expectations, and legislators can lose jobs because of that. At the end of the day, we're a purple state. And I think most Democrats and most Republicans kind of live in the world of the middle. And I think that's the majority of people in the legislature.
The reality is that basically the new money coming in equals the new money going out. So we have a lot of one-time things that we can do. We have some tax reductions that we can do, which I think will help drive the economy and actually help pay for themselves versus just doing an across-the-board cut where we don't have the same dynamic impact on the economy. So those are the discussions that we're going to have. As I said, all tax cuts are good, but my preference would be on ones that help people who are suffering the most from rising prices and rising rents, and also has the best economic impact for the state long term.
So now let's talk about some areas of compromise. One that was floated this week, obviously, is prisons, criminal justice reform. We know Governor Tony Evers launched a sweeping plan ahead of his budget. Of course, this is included in it. And now we're hearing more about where GOP leaders are standing on it. Ultimately, both sides want to close Green Bay, right? It's one of the oldest prisons here in the state. Renovate Waupun is another issue out there. But it's how much are Republicans willing to spend? And is it going to be a plan that Evers is ultimately going to sign?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Robin Voss, at a luncheon this week that we did, said he wants to do $2 billion for prisons. That number kind of caught my attention because I did the panel. $2 billion for prisons. Like that, okay. So there's math, right? He wants $2 billion for tax cuts, $2 billion for prisons. That's a big chunk of the projected surplus, $4.3 billion. Now, the governor's plan is $535 million. So what's the difference? Well, likely a new prison in the Green Bay area. Now, we haven't seen what Robin's going to propose just yet. You know, we're just in the beginning phases, but here's kind of what I'm looking for. One, the governor has a history where he throws this big idea at the legislature. They say, we're not going to do it that way. They get to where he wants and the ultimate goal, then he's okay with it. Brewer Stadium. He wanted to give money up front to the district board overseeing the stadium, then invest it, and it would generate money to pay. The Republicans said, no, we're going to do it this way. So they rewrote the entire package. Governor, in the end, signs it because why? The Brewers are staying through 2040, which is his entire goal. Shared revenue, another thing. He pushed a big idea out there. They said no. He wrote it. He's happy in the end. So with prisons, will he be happy if they send back to him? A key sticking point is going to be earned early release and capacity. The governor wants to take a Republican bill from last session to add job training for early release. and expand the opportunities to get out of prison early if you are a nonviolent offender, 4 years or less, till you get out. Robin Voss has said, we're not letting thousands of people out who are dangerous criminals. Okay, so there's one sticking point. The second thing is, the governor's plan would reduce capacity about 700 beds. If they build a new prison in Green Bay, will they keep capacity where it is right now or try to go above that? Because the governor, from we've talked to him before, he's got no interest in going above and beyond what we have right now for capacity. So again, can they find a sweet spot in the end what they're happy with? That's one area of compromise. I'm not seeing a ton of other compromises. I mean, like big tax stuff, big healthcare stuff, big school stuff. But the governor grabbed a bunch of GOP ideas in his budget for tax cuts, like exempting residential energy from the sales and use tax. That's a Republican bill that was out there before. So you might see some things like that work their way in the final deal.
Right. And we also heard Voss on this panel, too, talk about, well, we want to lower costs on everyday items, too, which is almost word for word that we heard the governor talk about in his budget address. So are there going to be areas of compromise, just smaller things, but things people can feel, right? Exempting the sales tax on feminine products, exempting the sales tax on over-the-counter medications. Little things here and there that might not be huge in the, you know, big scheme of things, but it would maybe ease, you know, some costs down the line from everyday household items. We've also talked about this before, too, you know, the proposal to freeze property taxes and then giving a state payment directly to municipalities. Likely probably not going to see that go anywhere with Republicans. But again, it's still just talkers right now, and we'll see what's going to be in the final document. But both sides ultimately want to use some of the surplus, give some tax relief, but the devil's in the details, as always, with big tax plans. We heard Voss said that he caucused with Senate Republicans this week to try to, you know, at least maybe get the train moving a little bit on this. But we have no real timeline on this besides that they don't want to put a tax cut really in the budget. It's going to be separate now. So that's kind of where we're at right now. Other headlines. Voss said all tax cuts are good. But what does that mean? Is it going to benefit the wealthiest earners? Is it going to be tax cuts across the board? We've heard Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux say, you know, we want to hit everyone, every income, regardless of what you make. But again, they've said that before, and the tax plans have looked slightly different. Other areas, Voss says there's room for compromise on universities' Wisconsin funding, and of course he's been a big critic of the UW system and has butted heads with them for many, many years. Another headline, he said he wants to spend at least $2 billion, like I said, on the prison system. So these are just other areas that are really going to be massaged over the next few weeks, and ultimately it's going to come down to what Republicans maybe leave some of Evers' ideas in the budget, revamp them completely, and ultimately, what's the price tag at the end of the day?
Yeah, Robin's compromise on UW is not going to be anywhere near $855
million. Yeah, to be clear, right.
So he's talking about maybe a little bit if you do some things that make me happy.
Right. I mean, they're going to probably get an increase, but definitely not that big price tag of what they've asked for. All right, we're now going to move on to the state Supreme Court race as billionaires are writing some big checks, which isn't unusual in these high-profile races, but it's now becoming an issue of who's writing the checks. First, let's just look at the dollar amounts, and then we're kind of touch a little bit more on who's donating to the campaigns. Now, this is information from Ad Impact over the past week. However, these numbers are very evolving and could be changing as we're taping right now. But what we want to put in perspective there is that earlier in this week, conservatives, Brad Schimmel, had a fundraising edge and how much he was spending on the airwaves and what he had reserved for the next few weeks. Then just in the past day or so, Susan Crawford had more reserved and more spots that are going to be on the air. But looking at those dollar amounts, total between both candidates, we're at nearly $30 million in spending and reserved on air so far. Now, Republicans, like I said, hold a little bit of a future reservation $1 million, about $2 million over Crawford. But what we want to get at is that this is much different compared to 2023 when you had Dan Kelly hardly raising any money or couldn't really compete with Janet Protasiewicz at the time with how much money she had and how much of a fundraising edge that she had. Now, getting back to my point of how I opened this conversation is who's writing the checks. This week, of course, billionaire Elon Musk donated to Brad Schimmel's campaign. Also, a lot of get-out-the-vote events, flyers, door knocking, etc. Meanwhile, George Soros, a Democratic mega donor, is backing a Crawford. Has always really backed Democrats, but now we hear the candidates kind of taking aim at both of these individuals as they're kind of very controversial individuals. So let's just hear from both candidates kind of knocking one another on who's funneling money in their campaign.
Here's what's at stake in this election. My opponent, Brad Schimmel, is the most extreme candidate to ever run for this office in Wisconsin history. He has spent his career focused on politics, partisanship, and self-promotion, and we don't need any of those things on our Wisconsin Supreme Court. And now Elon Musk is trying to buy a seat on our Supreme Court so that Brad Schimmel can rubber stamp his extreme agenda. I will be a fair and common sense justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and you have my promise to do that.
I am grateful for support that's coming in to help me get my message out about restoring objectivity to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, but I don't have any agenda that I'm working alongside anyone. And let's be clear, my opponent's gotten money from George Soros, the guy who wanted to defund police departments. I think he has very dangerous ideas for America. And she took $1 million directly from George Soros. I'm sorry, I don't think these two things compare. I don't think they equate at all. I'm grateful for our supporters, but they're getting nothing except me following the law, period.
So despite these kind of jabs that they're taking at one another, both of them are going on the campaign trail. I'm going to be impartial, but we know this is, yes, labeled a nonpartisan race, but this is kind of how it ramps up on the rhetoric side of things.
So part of it is, you know, we're a month out, and they're trying to motivate their base. So look, start with George Soros. He's given $1 million to the State Democratic Party right before the State Democratic Party gave $2 million to Crawford. So not a direct contribution, but hard not to mix those dollars in from George Soros to Susan Crawford, right? Elon Musk, he's more hands-on so far. So he's got, his PAC is doing like $2.5 million in get out the vote efforts, canvassing, door knocking, about $2 million in TV ads I've seen so far from the independent expense reports filed with the state. So he is engaged with that race. He's tweeting about it, like he's hands-on. It's a double-edged sword though for Schimmel, because that money is awesome help for Schimmel. And Republicans are thrilled they've nationalized this race. They felt like 2 years ago the Democrats nationalized an abortion and they couldn't match that. They feel like now they have nationalized the race. They've got tension from everybody across the country. And Elon Musk is tweeting about this thing like every day. They feel great. However, Elon Musk also is leading this DOGE effort at the federal level. His poll numbers are not very good. He's a lightning rod. Democrats have been kind of dispirited since Trump's win in November. There is a way to get them motivated, making them angry. Elon Musk makes them angry. So that's one part of what's going on here. And then two, with the money piece, what's interesting to keep in mind is Democrats have a fundamentally different approach to the campaign spending than Republicans do. Susan Crawford is the vehicle who's driving the spending on TV. So the numbers you had, I saw the same numbers, $8 million on Monday. It was at $13 million as of last night. It's evolving constantly. Even though I tell you, say that right now, it could be more than that.
Right.
In a half an hour. So anyway, that's going through her. Republicans have an overall spending advantage, but it's multiple groups doing it. Candidates get a better rate on the air than groups do. Republicans, in talking to operatives, GOP operatives, they're frustrated by it. They're like, why can't we be smarter, more efficient with our dollars? There are a couple reasons. One, if you give to the party, your name is on the donation. Like WMC's Issues Mobilization Council, it is the arm, the political arm of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. They don't want their name on the donation. They don't want it out there because their business needs blowback sometimes for being involved in a race. That's one reason. Dick Uihlein, Fair Courts America, that's one of his big groups. Dick likes to he wants to control the message. He's driving that train. Like, it's his money, he's going to drive that train. The Republican Party of Wisconsin has yet to prove it can be an efficient vehicle for these transfers. Democrats, though, have no qualms about it. Ben Wickler, the state party, they have done a great job of taking the big donations in, moving to a candidate. Why I bring this up is, even if Crawford's outspent, she can match or exceed in terms of number of views with the ads. That's important to watch. So as you see reports about dollars being spent, keep in mind the points. That's one that really drives how often you see these ads and can help Crawford hold parity. Now the question is, as much as she puts in, Elon Musk is the world's richest man.
I was just going to say, it's all about maintaining, too.
How much does he want to spend on Wisconsin Supreme Court race? That's a big question.
Right. We know the record was a little bit over $50 million spent in advertising in 2023. Like I said, we're at $30 million. And it's always about maintaining that money, maintaining that cash flow. If things maybe are not looking so good with the federal government, there's high criticism. Are those mega donors on the Republican side still want to fund? I mean, there's so many factors that can happen that anything can change. But it's going to be just fascinating to see whether we get closer and closer to that $50 million number and beating, you know, the most expensive judicial race that we saw here in Wisconsin. And it's going to really only ramp up from here. So if you think you're seeing a lot of ads now, just wait.
Besides the spending, we're seeing Republicans more organized with their on-the-ground campaign. The canvassing, so I said Musk Group, Americans for Prosperity Wisconsin was on the ground in November doing doors for Schimmel. We've seen other groups tweeting out pictures of them doing stuff. Republicans feel way better at the ground game than they did 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Now, they don't have one 2 years ago, so it's not a high bar to cross. Democrats haven't shown up as much spending, but they're doing their stuff. It's starting to ramp up on their side, too. They feel like, hey, we're in good shape with that.
It's a little bit of a closer horse race in financial, at least for sure. All right, let's move on to another topic this week, which is about the Republican Immigration Enforcement Bill. We've talked about it here before on the show, but there was actually a public hearing this week that we just want to highlight. So during it, Democrats questioned why the state should be mandated to assist ICE in deportation efforts. Now, Republican authors of the bill argued it's necessary because there are some law enforcement agencies, they say, are not complying with federal law to notify immigration officials when someone is in their custody and is in the U.S. illegally. You know, there's places like Dane and Milwaukee who have vowed that we are not going to cooperate with ICE in any fashion if they're here on the grounds. They don't have to, but this bill would require them to say, hey, if you have someone who has in custody that has a very violent offense, you're going to have to, you know, check their citizenship status. Let's just hear the dueling arguments from the public hearing real quick, and then we'll dive more into the bill.
What are we gaining here? I mean, law enforcement already has the opportunity to allocate their resources as they need and determine the best places that they are there for public safety. That's why we elect sheriffs. We want to put them in a position so they can make those determinations for their local community. And instead, we're mandating that they comply with the federal government in this case, and we don't really know what the local circumstances are. They're already struggling with challenges in staffing and with their financial circumstances, and then we threaten to harm them financially if they don't.
This idea of it's going to cost money or take time to share information with the federal government, we already do that. It's literally the click of a mouse. To ensure the safety and security of our community, we have to enforce the law with the partnerships of our other organizations. We're the entire criminal justice system. You have the DA's office who prosecutes, you have the law enforcement officers, you have corrections, and within law enforcement, you have various layers. If we're not working together, we can't complete the goal that we all have, which is public safety.
So we know that this bill is going to be vetoed by Governor Tony Evers. He's already signaled that. But this is, again, trying to match what the conversation is happening in Washington, D.C. And, of course, this has been a huge priority of President Trump to, you know, carry out mass deportations. And they want basically any help they can get from the local level.
Look, the politics of this is simple. There are a bunch of new Democrats in the legislature. This is an issue last fall. By putting this through, they'll get them on the record about whether they're pro or con with this bill. Goes to Evers' desk. He's promised to veto it. That puts that on the record for them maybe next fall. 2026, who knows what the issues will be. But if this is a hot issue in 26, this is a thing you'll see in mail pieces a year and a half from now.
All right. And the last topic we want to highlight this week is that there's going to be a new audit into the Department of Public Instruction, which was just announced. It will be formally introduced next week at the Joint Audit Committee. And this will really just examine those changes to the recent state testing standards. And that's pretty much the scope of this. You know, we've talked about this before. DPI has faced sharp criticism from both sides of the aisle over lowering the standards that will no longer align with national standards, which means when we got the latest report cards, you can't compare them to years past. So while it maybe appeared that students are doing well in reading and math, what year are you comparing it to? Well, nothing. But going forward, that's what DPI argues is, hey, we got these new metrics now. Just wait until next school year and we'll be able to compare and contrast.
Look, there's already a bill out there that would restore the old benchmarks. This is a piece that maybe, just maybe, is related to a campaign that's going to happen a month from now, the DPI race. Another way to highlight this issue was Jill Underlie and try and put it back in the public eye and ding her again about this at the election.
All right, let's get the stock picks this week. And rising is culture wars, because we're going to go off on a few launch points here, Chair. There's a lot to cover.
You may have heard the phrase, assassinated person, the last week and a half on social media, if you follow Wisconsin politics. You would have read it 2 years ago in the budget that Evers introduced. Almost the same phrase in 2021 as well. Why is it an issue now? That's the question I've been asking all week. Why is it an issue now? Here's the background. Under state law, if a married couple, male and female, goes through artificial insemination, if the male, the husband, consents to that procedure, he is automatically considered the father of that child legally going forward. If a same-sex couple does the same procedure and they are married, they don't have the same protection. The entire push with the inseminated person piece is to ensure that that same-sex couple has the same rights with their family as an opposite-sex couple one. Now, there are other provisions in the governor proposed, of gender neutral language with adoption, other stuff, replacing mother, those kinds of things. But this is what caught people's attention, right? Inseminated person. Why now? It was there 2 years ago. It was there 4 years ago. Why now? Well, what's changed is last November. Donald Trump ran on the anti-woke agenda, put Dems on the defensive, and people have argued to me that the voters now are more of like, okay, the Democrats are that party of Joe Biden and this whole wokeness and transgender stuff. And this is trying to reinforce that with, oh, there's an election coming up in a month, that they want Republicans to be engaged and turn out and turn off moderate voters to Democrats in general, and Susan Crawford. So there's that. There's also a lot of stuff going on. The past week, we've seen four different transgender bills introduced. Now, two about sports. Obviously, Trump has changed the policy at the federal level. WIAA has changed at the state level. NCAA has conformed to Trump's policies, but they want those in state law. Another bill about gender-affirming care, all three were vetoed last time. They're back again. Fourth bill that would basically say that you can't use different pronouns, the ones you were born with, unless you get your parents' permission at school. Mm-hmm. All right? This goes kind of, Madison has a policy about that. There's a lawsuit, long story to go over. This is all coming up now because there is a new rise in the culture wars. It's not abortion anymore. It's not homosexuality. It's about transgender rights, okay? That's what's driving this discussion. Now, the question is it a driver for the average voter, or is it a base issue? Base issues are fine. Like, they get people excited to turn out and vote. That's good for you on your side. My question is this really going to turn people out who, this isn't a big issue for them. This isn't like a driving issue for them. But it cuts through the clutter. Like, we've seen all these ads on TV. What are people talking about on social media in Wisconsin right now? It's a man person. It's just an easy thing to break through and get people's attention. The governor, by the way, has not done a very good job of messaging this. People argue me there's a better way to push back than what he has. And because of the way he's kind of doubled down on it, it hasn't really kind of put this to bed. And so the question is, does it last for another week, 2 weeks? Is it around next fall? Who knows? But it hasn't been a good messaging effort from the governor on this issue.
Yeah, and what sources have told me too is that they almost say that, yeah, if this issue does fade, they might bring it up in a year, 2 years. If Evers runs again, are we going to see ads with the quotations around it of inseminated person? Because let's be honest, if you were on social media or if you're reading many of us news outlets were reporting on it, it catches your eye. There's no doubt. And all it really took was over the weekend, or I believe last Friday after we taped the show as well, a Republican lawmaker to issue a press release about it and start talking about it online, and it gains traction like that. Mm-hmm. You also had people like Elon Musk, Packers legend Brett Favre, people tweeting about it from the conservative side to really try to keep it in the news. Like most stories, they typically die down, but it's always about what, you know, people are telling me is this could come back to haunt Evers. It could maybe haunt Democrats if they back the governor's budget. I mean, who knows, right? It's a very long time away. But that's also another, you know, the political side of it. All right, now let's get to Mix this week, which is Congressman Derek Van Orden. He's issued a lot of tweets this week, accused some Democratic lawmakers of saying things. It's, once again, Derek Van Orden is in the spotlight.
That's the same old with Derek. Yeah. This week it's, there is great risk and great reward possible for Van Orden with his budget resolution. So remember, this past week, the House passed along party lines a budget resolution. Now, the language is not there. Basically, it says we're going to try and cut taxes $4.5 trillion next decade and cut spending by $2 trillion over the next 10 years. There's no actual language of how they're going to do that. This is the easy part. They barely got it done. Now, the possible reward for Van Orden is if Republicans can pass a budget that takes away no income tax on tips, like Trump talked about, cuts taxes on retirement income, addresses immigration, and keeps the economy trucking along, okay, that could be good for Van Orden and other people who be targets in 2026, right? That could help. If Republicans can't get their stuff together and don't pass a budget period, if the government shuts down for March 14th because the funding runs out, they need to do a continuing resolution, if their message is about how they can't govern, that raises the risk for Van Orden. Now, we're already seeing members of Congress get blowback at town hall meetings about what's happening,
right?
Because big thing, Medicaid. This resolution does not say we shall cut Medicaid.
Right.
What it does say, though, is the committee oversees Medicaid has to cut $880 billion. There isn't enough other spending in that area the committee oversees to cut that money without touching safety net programs. Again, not saying it's going to happen, but they've got a difficult task of that actual language they have to do to make this whole thing work. Now, Van Orden staff, some others are saying all these protests, it's AstroTurf, I'd like to say. It's manufactured by Democrats. I heard that same thing in 2009 from Democrats about the early part of the Tea Party movement, that all these town hall meetings, people angry about the stimulus package, about Affordable Care Act, it's all ginned up by professional operatives. Maybe. Maybe it's not the same. But if this is the first hint of the blowback from people going, wait a second, I didn't vote for this. I voted for A, B, and C. I thought it was going to be this. This is chaos. This is making me unhappy. That can make 2026 a very challenging year, someone like Eric Van Orden. Now, Rebecca Cook ran against Van Orden in 2024. She tried to run in 2022, lost in the primary. I wouldn't be surprised if she's looking at running again against him. So keep a watch out for that. But Van Orden's in that pot. He's one of that group of lawmakers that this could go either way for him with his budget thing. It could really make his life easier or more difficult next fall.
All right. Following this week is minority undergraduate retention program, as there's appeal court kind of messes up the process.
Yeah. So this was created back in the mid-70s originally and involved minority students. It was expanded to include people who were either from Vietnam, I think Laos, Cambodia, or a descendant of somebody from there, obviously helping American troops in the Vietnam conflict. So it had gone on for all these years. A Jane County judge ruled it constitutional still in 2022. 23, though, U.S. Supreme Court issues ruling about the use of race of admissions for colleges, so you can't do that anymore. The Second District Court of Appeals in Waukesha Conservative Court struck down the program this week, saying, look, based on what they ruled in the U.S. Supreme Court, we can't do this anymore. It's about $980,000 a year in grants, $2,500 per student. They said, you can't spend taxpayer money on it anymore. And one of the things of the decision was saying, look, this program obviously would help somebody as a young person who aided American troops in Vietnam. It does not help a young Afghani woman who helped American troops in Afghanistan in this century. That doesn't make any sense. So the Department of Justice represents the Higher Educational AIDS Board, which is the entity that does the program, told me they're reviewing the decision. There's a chance to appeal, but with that Supreme Court ruling out that standard, probably don't go very far.
All right. Well, that will do it for another busy week in politics. Thanks so much for joining us this week. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next time.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.